In tune with summer, you're listening to CBNR, The Sound of the Lakes, 1590 in Butterton.
My greeting shoots out into the cosmos. Hello to the universe. Welcome to sunny days and nights. My name is Paul Moss. Won't you please come in? The nights still linger, the borealis still boggles. The coyotes howl and the loons go nuts. The sun pounds down and the transient population of holidaymakers changes regularly. So still, there are stories to tell and people to meet.
A revolution is taking place here in this unassuming building on the New Hamford Road. This one-time dairy barn is now headquarters to the Canon 99 movement, the new wave, the bold new frontier in taxidermy. I'm joined by one of Canon 99's founders and prime movers, Gary Lennox.
Hello.
I've sure heard a whole lot about your operation, Gary.
Well, there has been a lot of talk, yes, a lot of...
Controversy?
Yeah, sure, controversy. Yeah, you're right, the split with the taxidermy establishment was an acrimonious one, so...
But you've rebuilt your bridges, though, huh?
No, you know, there's still a lot of antagonism, and I frankly can't say I have any interest in having anything to do with any of them, so...
You know. Oh.
No, well, they're, what are they? You know, they're stuffers and mounters. They stuff, they mount. That's all they can, you know, and we at Canon 99 are try to be animators, right? We're artists.
I've read, well, I've scanned your manifesto, and you reject angrily much of conventional trophy display.
Right, we reject the very concept of the trophy or triumphalism. We oppose absolutely the mount as an expression of the taxidermist coming from his assumed superiority to subject. The work we do is an expression of the animal stuffed, and an expression we hope is imbued with the subject's identity.
You know. Wow, it's art talk that, as usual, leaves me hopelessly confused.
Okay, well, put simply, we refuse to pose animals in positions that portray them as victims.
Yeah, I got that, but I thought I misunderstood. Because, well...
What?
Well, if they end up here, they are victims.
They're prey, they're quarry... You see, but not, you see, there's a difference.
Well, not so in the case of this woodchuck I brought along. He's a victim. I backed up over him at the cottage, Monday or Tuesday, and I thought, where I was doing this piece, maybe I could score a freebie, so I tossed him in the trunk.
No. I'm sorry. This animal is in an advanced state of decay.
I guess, hey, this is about Friday, right? I parked in the sun over at the station, so not mountable then?
No. And you see, why would you want to mount a woodchuck you ran over? You see, that's the...
Keepsake. It's no matter. You must have a bucket for guts and stuff. I'll just toss it in there.
In the corner.
Missed. I'll just, can we have a look at some of your work?
Sure, okay. Just over here.
Was there not an earlier challenge to taxidermical orthodoxy?
There was fur realism back in the 60s, and more recently, Reconstructionism. My problem, though, with them is that one didn't think of the bear or the pike or the buck on display. One thought only of, you know, Hubie King or Ted Mercer or Alain DeFranco. The taxidermist was getting in the way of the work.
Well, you've got to give something to Hubie King, though.
Why?
First guy to pose with a snarl.
Okay, yeah, but then, after that, it was all snarls, right? I mean, he humiliated himself with the snarling ducks. I mean,
well, I'll give you that some of the later work was a little mannered, but at least he was continuing to experiment. And come on, what about DeFranco's owl-catching rabbit? That was seminal.
Okay, I'm not going to say that owl-rabbit wasn't important, but, you know, what comes out of it? It defines a genre, okay, but then it's de facto a genre piece. You know, that's, you know, and Ted Mercer, she's there at the end.
He has the bottle, I understand.
I mean, last going off, he'd just stuff anything.
Ah, here we are now. Wow. This is incredible. Describe for the radio audience, please, what it is we're looking at here.
Okay, this is my squirrels in the committee room. The squirrels, seven of them, are sitting around a stump, and they are holding a meeting. So that's basically it.
Well, at the risk of, I'm not sure about the vocab here, Gar, but anthropomorphizing a bit here now?
Not at all. It's a natural setting. See, it's not a, you know, it's a natural setting.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. Still, it's a lot like many programming committee meetings I've attended. I'd be the sleepy-like squirrel at the end, his mind drifting off, perhaps getting a little squirrely, and...
I see. Yeah, it takes a minute.
Yeah. Well, it sneaks up on you. It's a good piece. Such power. And over here, it's a badger, no?
Yes.
Well, now, see, I'm confused. Because, again, I'm seeing a victim. The badger here is dead.
Well, you see, the badger is dead. That's the thing. And, you see, a traditionalist wouldn't have it looking dead. So, clearly, this badger is what? It is feigning death. It's, you know, it's a first.
Yes, it's coiled, looking for all the world dead. Yes. And yes.
And yet, like any badger, waiting to spring, all claws churning. And yet not, you
yeah,
see.
Yeah. Well, that is brilliant. That's the part I love about
well,
it.
It's complicated, and, you know, it's nuance, it's implication. So that's what we, you know.
Too bad.
What?
Well, I mean, I'd love to pick up something for the cabin. Give it a bit of character. But they're certainly out of my price range. I don't suppose I could commission you to do a piece, like a good old bull moose head or maybe a mangy fox showing a bit of fang?
No. But I, you know, I can tell you where to go for that sort of thing. I mean, I just didn't think that's what... Never mind.
That's okay. I'll just drop this line of inquiry. Can I perhaps see what you're working on now?
Yes, sure. This way, please. Yeah. Okay, sorry, it's a little bit crowded. Gee, that shirt's a nice fit there, Paul.
Thank you.
All right, so this is my latest work. Just give me a second. It's not finished, of course.
It's boy.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah. What do you call this piece, Gary?
I call this Park Ranger.
I see that. It's great. Gary Lennox, Canon 99 Taxiderm Maestro. Thank you for this. It's wonderful to finally meet a real poseur.
No, it's my pleasure.
In Craxton Mills, you're listening to Sunny Days and Nights, broadcasting across 100 lakes throughout the Greater Valley area on CBNR, part of the Trans-Canada network of CBC Radio.
The switchboard here at CBNR has been fielding a lot of calls recently concerning the police dragging effort going on Lake Tuskegee. From my veranda overlooking the lake, I see this very suspicious business every day myself. There's obviously some public concern about all this, so putting on my journalist's cap, which I found a little loose, I placed a call to the Penthaven detachment of the RCMP asking what it is they're looking for. Sergeant Phil Marco, the duty spokesperson for the force, declined comment until the investigation has been completed. But Sergeant Marco did provide me a list of items brought up by their nets that they consider irrelevant to the ongoing search, and it makes for very interesting reading. As expected, I suppose, in amongst the ringer washers and the scuttled runabouts, the authorities found a number of chain-bound steamer trunks and oaken chests that, upon opening, were found to contain... But I see we don't have the time. I'll return to this fascinating list perhaps next week. Julie Secord, my associate producer and technician, joins me now for the County Almanac.
It's that time of year when all the horticultural shows and county fairs are taking place, and we close in on the final rounds of Rural 2004.
This is the big intercantonal fruit and vegetable show that takes place, what?
Every 4 years, mm-hmm. over in Penthaven at the Agrodome. That's the old Udekral.
Now, there have been a number of qualifying rounds, and I was actually a judge in the turnip and rutabaga shocker last week. And we have to make sense of the draws, though.
Yes, and it's complicated. So listen closely.
Veronica Monk's cabbages must beat Linda Pratt's to stand any chance of making it past the knockout stage. Any win in apples, peaches, or pears for either Hannibal Kubri or the effervescent Sven Jost will send Mrs. Monk through. If Kubri and Jost draw, then Mrs. Monk will still go through, as her carrots accumulated more points than Mrs. Pratt's.
If, on the off chance, Kubri and Jost also draw in radishes and melons, Monk is relegated regardless of her performance against the stalwart Pratt. This is because when points are level, the first factor is results between the people involved in previous encounters. A draw in radishes and melons will grant Kubri and Jost superiority. Thus, Monk suffers ignoble defeat, even if she claims victory in corn, by 50 points.
Do you think we could go over all that again? I have to say that the incisive entry of the young sensation Monica Furlow really made the Alliums a thriller.
Bob Vertel made an unconscionable error by playing for the tie in cubes.
Not imagining for a second the explosive upset taking place in Brassica.
You saw the winning cauliflower?
That level of skill in cultivation? Frightening. Never eat anything larger than your head, Julie.
Should be a wild night of produce when the finals take place next weekend.
Somehow, you know, I never thought I'd hear the words wild night and produce in the same sentence. Oh, wait, now I did. Once before.
You're red as a beet, Paul.
It's nothing. Go on.
The old Udekral, that's the place to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The winners and runners-up will receive their ribbons at a ceremony slated for 8 o'clock on Sunday night.
And, Julie, you asked me to remind you to disperse our coordinates.
Oh, thanks. Yes, Paul. Our email address is sunnydays@cbc.ca. You can also peek at our website, www.cbc.ca/sunnydays. Or you can write us in care of the CBC, Box 500, Station A, Toronto, Ontario, M5W1E6.
And I believe you now have a musical request.
I thought you had it.
Yes, you're right, so I do. For Bridget and Sam in Cheapham, here's Big Smoke with Clothes.
I wish that maybe I could come around you more often. I was thinking maybe we could hold hands for a while, but it might be suspicious. Oh, tell me please, what's a boy to do when he's in this position, when he's stuck on you? This town is too small for a clown like myself to send you private tuition, 'cause you're right here in the public domain, and the things that I've been thinking kind of private, kind of vain. I know that other boys have felt the same when they're putting on your clothes. Maybe I could dress up real fine and stroll in and say all the right words. No, 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 you're too hip to those lines. Well, they're words that you have already heard, 'cause you're right here in the public domain. I could dress up real fine and stroll in and say all the right words. No, 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 you're too hip to those lines. Well, they're words that you have already heard. 'Cause you're right here in the public domain. And the things that I've been thinking, kind of private, kind of vain. I know that other boys have felt the same. I don't wanna live with any shame. I was just hoping maybe you might feel the same when I put it on the pool.
We played together every summer from earliest childhood. She, inscrutable tomboy Beothic princess, to my rugged and anachronistic towny cowboy. Jane, which was in fact her name, to my Tarzan. Nurse to my doctor, or patient. She was my second cousin and 2 years my senior. So as we got older, I suspect she was indulging me a little, as we made believe. Several moths shared ownership of the cabin on the pond, and owing to a number of long-standing disagreements and petty family grudges, resulting from drunkenness and candor at a shotgun wedding, and the ill manners of a randy water dog name of Towser, the schedule of occupancy always put our two families there at the same time. Jane and I had several redoubts and holes. Hideaways and forts in the woods, a close-quarter crawl space beneath the cabin itself, but we spent most of our time together on, or actually on and off, the floating wharf. The floating wharf. No indefinite article here. This was a the. It was more than a wharf, really. It was a man-made, purpose-built-to-last peninsula. It was a landing strip. It had been fashioned by my great-grandfather, Dexter, father of mother of father's side of the family, a man who was more than simply handy, a man who was, I might as well say it, mad. A man for whom the ceaseless construction of contrivances was a symptom of a raging obsessive-compulsive disorder. The family says, I am the spit of this man. The floating wharf, which had sustained gales, freezes and thaws, beachings in droughts, is indestructible. Fashioned from some tropical wood flotsam from a wreck in the 1870s, and buoyed with an armor-reinforced ballast bladder salvaged from a scuttled U-boat, it... I digress. Actually, I avoid. For this story, even now, collars me feverish. Jane. Jane, who came every summer to sit and play. Jane, who returned this particular season, transformed. The legginess had burgeoned last August when she rode long, lean antelope quarters, ill-matched to the rest of her frame. But there had been an anatomical reckoning over the intervening fall, winter, and spring. There was more of her, of lines curved, full, round counter to all that length. She wasn't as inclined to play, had taken to sleeping in, and was not stirred by the heat of the summer sun, but made languid by it. So it was that on that hot, hot, hot day, as I cannonballed and belly-flopped off the wharf, Jane just lay there, prone, supine, prone, supine, tanning, becoming bronze, acquiring a chocolate coating for someone. I'm watching now from the water, bouncing buoyantly from the pebbled bottom so that my eyes and nose are just above the water. I am like a frog out here. Supine, the sun on her face. Come, freckles. And over again now Jane turns onto her front and reaching back to unhasp the strap of her top, letting the unjoined strands ribbon to the monkey lumber of the wharf decking. She doesn't want a tan line back there, and it's clear that the flimsy piece of swimwear can no longer comfortably accommodate. There's a call from the cabin. A bellow, actually, to come up out of it. Percival and Minnie had arrived. Come up. Come up to the cabin. Come up. But I was already up. Yes, beneath the gentle ripples, hidden in the murky water, my circus tent. My big top. And I the clown. Jane asks if I'm coming. I'll be there in a second, I say. Yes, I'm coming up, too.
Another show wends its way through the stars, and we'll wend our way through the Hundred Lakes again this week. Expect us back 7 moons from now. In the meantime, check our website, www.cbc.ca/sunnydays. Send us an email. Our address is sunnydays@cbc.ca, or frank an envelope and mail it to us, care of the CBC, Box 500, Station A, Toronto, Ontario, M5W1E6. For Julie Secord, my name is Paul Moss. Join us next week for Sunny Days and Nights, the campfire of your summer.
This is CBC Radio.